Jai Om Vishnu Pada Parvahansa Pri Vrajakat Sarayastu Tarasita Sri Shumar is the language that A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Iskan founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananda Koti Vaishnava Dindi Ki, Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki, Prem Sega Bhav Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastava Gaura Thakur Dindi Ki, Shri Shri Dadhara Krishna Gaura Gopita Shyama Kumara Thakurni Giri Gopitana Ki, Shri Vrindavan Thama Ki, Shri Mayapur Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Aham
aham
puratita
puratita
bhave
bhave
bhavam
bhavam
mune
mune
dasyas
dasyas
tu dasyaschana
dasyaschana
veda
veda
parinam
parinam
nirupito
nirupito
palaka
palaka
eva
eva
yoginam
yoginam
shushushane
shushushane
pravrishi
pravrishi
Nirvivikshatam
Nirvivikshatam
Aham puratita bhave bhavam mune
Aham puratita bhave bhavam mune
Dasyastu kasyaschana vedavadinam
Dasyastu kasyaschana vedavadinam
Nirupito balaka eva yoginam
Nirupito balaka eva yoginam
Shushushane pravrishi nirvivikshatam
Shushushane pravrishi nirvivikshatam
Aham,
aham,
I, pura,
pura,
formerly,
formerly,
atita
pave,
in the previous millennium,
in the previous millennium,
abhavam,
abhavam,
became,
became,
mune,
mune,
o muni,
o muni.
Dasya,
dasya,
of the maidservant,
of the maidservant,
to,
but.
Kasyaschana,
kasyaschana,
certain,
certain,
Vedavadinam,
Vedavadinam,
of the followers of Vedanta,
of the followers of Vedanta,
Nirupita,
Nirupita,
engaged,
engaged,
Balaka,
Balaka,
boy servant,
boy
servant,
Eva, Eva,
only,
only,
Yoginam,
Yoginam,
of the devotees,
of the devotees.
Shushushane,
Shushushane,
in the service of,
in the service of,
Pravrishi,
Pravrishi,
during the 4 months of the rainy season,
during the 4 months of the rainy season,
Nirvivikshatam,
Nirvivikshatam,
living together,
living together.
Translation. O Muni, in the last millennium, I was born as the son of a certain maidservant, engaged in the service of Brahmins who were following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. Purport. The wonder of an atmosphere surcharged with devotional service to the Lord is briefly described herein by Sri Narad Muni. He was the son of the most insignificant parentage. He was not properly educated. Still, because his complete energy was engaged in the service of the Lord, he became an immortal sage. Such is the powerful action of devotional service. The living entities are the marginal energy of the Lord, and therefore they are meant for being properly utilized in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. When this is not done, one's situation is called Maya. Therefore, the illusion of Maya is at once dissipated as soon as one's full energy is converted in the service of the Lord, instead of in sense enjoyment. From the personal example of Sri Narad Muni in his previous birth, it is clear that the service of the Lord begins with the service of the Lord's bona fide servants. The Lord says that the service of his servants is greater than his personal service. Service of the devotee is more valuable than the service of the Lord. One should therefore choose a bona fide servant of the Lord constantly engaged in his service, accept such a servant as the spiritual master, and engage himself in his spiritual master's service. Such a spiritual master is the transparent medium by which to visualize the Lord, who is beyond the conception of the material senses. By service of the bona fide spiritual master, the Lord consents to reveal himself in proportion to the service rendered. Utilization of the human energy in the service of the Lord is the progressive path of salvation. The whole cosmic creation becomes at once identical with the Lord as soon as service in relation with the Lord is rendered under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master. The expert spiritual master knows the art of utilizing everything to glorify the Lord, and therefore, under his guidance, the whole world can be turned into the spiritual abode by the divine grace of the Lord's servant. So the principal point here is that of service, being engaged. That Narad Muni is trying to get a point across, the point that he is engaged, he was engaged in the Lord's service. That was his perfection. But by coming in contact with the Lord's devotees, then he was able to come to the perfectional platform. And even in here we see so that by being engaged in the Lord's, the associates of the Lord, the Lord's servants, that is actually what one is trying to get to. So the Lord himself is most pleased by this. So here is, and by that process, then, by taking shelter of the spiritual master, then by engaging in the Lord's service, everything in the material creation is automatically engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So that sums up what Vyasadeva was actually trying to do previously. He was trying to show all the different varieties of activities in the material world and how they could be connected to the Lord. But because that connection, he was trying to throw his net very broadly to catch everyone, therefore the standard drops. And then in dropping the standard, then he has to drop it to the lowest common denominator, which is gain and safety. And by doing that, then everybody's willing to follow what Vyasadeva says, but unfortunately, the part about the Lord gets missed out. So he's trying to, the process, though he's using actually the process of descending, the Lord descends into all the activities of the material world. The presentation is such that the Lord's descension into the activity is maybe missed. And so therefore the people will perform the activity, and from that they will feel, I will be elevated. So then actually the people are taking up the ascending method. And so therefore karma and jnana become prominent. I will ascend to the heavenly planets, I will ascend to the Brahman. By my own endeavors, by my activity, I will go to the heavenly planet, by my knowledge, I'll go to the Brahman. But the actual process which is missed is that the Lord descends into the material energy. And by serving him, by seeing everything in connection to him, then everything becomes surcharged, everything becomes spiritual. And then the devotee, automatically, everything they're dealing with is engaged in the Lord's service. So what Vyasadeva wanted to accomplish is accomplished, but you start from the Lord and come back into the material world. Now, you don't start from the material world and try to get out. You start from the Lord, and by him descending into the material world, by serving him, he's not in the material world, so you're not in the material world. So it's not even that you have to get out. You're automatically out. It's like the example that when you approach, you come to the shore of the unlimited ocean of material existence. it means shoreless. It means this, we know this shore, but there isn't one on the other side. It just doesn't exist. It's that big. So that has to be crossed. Now, this is a problem. How do you cross something that there's no shore on the other side? So then you approach the boat of the spiritual master. So when you approach that, the instructions of the spiritual master, then when you go to step on that boat, then that ocean becomes reduced down to the size of the cat's hoofprint, and you automatically step across. So by taking shelter, it's automatically reduced. You're across. So in the same way, as by approaching the Lord and serving the Lord, automatically the material world becomes spiritual. So you don't have to separately endeavor to get out of the material world, because you're already out. Right? Because the material world is a conception. It's a place, but it's a place within the Lord's creation. The Lord comes here, he's not in Maya. His devotees come here, they're not in Maya. So the problem's not the material world. You know, it's just like you can go to a very nice garden or you could go to a parking lot, right? They're both places and you can perform activities there. One's nice, one's not so nice. So the spiritual energy is nice, the material energy is less nice. But they're both Brahman, they're both Krishnas. The difference is that we take it that this parking lot is great, you know. That's the illusion. So it's because of us, we think material energy is nice. But as soon as we see it in relationship to Krishna, we see Krishna, then the material energy is just part of Krishna's energy. And so then we are out of the material world. It's just automatic. So this is the point he's trying to point out, is instead of taking the people through all this rigorous difficulties, like that is in the previous verse, he's mentioning here the about austerities, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns, charity, you know, all this process of knowledge, right? Knowledge is accomplished by those things. By those things you gain knowledge. So instead of that very rigorous path, you just take up glorifying the Lord and engaging in this service. And by that, automatically, the result of knowledge is attained when it comes to the transcendental platform. So that is what he is getting across here, is that this is the point to be understood, is that you approach the Lord, everything you wanted to do in all your Vedic literatures, culminating in the Mahabharata, is automatically accomplished. Right? But directly, rather than indirectly. Rather than each subject, you try to go up through that, get to the Lord. You just accept the Lord, then automatically he descends into all the subject matter that you want to describe. So then it's automatic. It's much easier. Prabhupada makes the point, is that rather than us trying to see God, we try to act in such a way God wants to see us. Much easier. Right? God's everywhere, so he can easily reveal himself. Us trying to see him, very difficult. He's a very elusive person. Right? What's the rule on silent N? There's a silent N? Yeah. There's a rule in Jiva Goswami's grammar about N. At the end of the word is silent. And that N is actually dealing with the ending that shows that this is what is doing it. It's the activity, the N means this word is what's actually doing it. And that N represents the Lord. Because the Lord is doing everything, but you can't see him in the creation. Even though everything's going on by him, you can't see him. So everything's happening by him. So he is not an easy one to see, because he is by nature hidden. He's always described, unseeable, infallible. You can't find him, even though he's right there. But if you act in such a way, then he can reveal himself anywhere, anytime, any place, because he is in everything. Everything is him. So that's the principle. So now, in showing this, then Narad Muni then gives an example, because it should be applied. This is the principle. Vedanta will simply give the point. Then it is up to the individual to take that point and apply it in their life. But here, the Puranas are considered, therefore, better especially for this age, because the example of how to apply it is given. It makes life much easier. So here he's showing this point of being engaged in the Lord's service as being engaged under the direction of the devotees of the Lord. So here in this example, then he's using also within this, he's taking this step. Not only is he engaged in the service of the Lord, devotees of the Lord. So you're approaching the Lord, but you approach the devotees through the devotees. Right? The Lord is approached by his devotees. And it is his mother who is the maidservant. His mother's doing the service. Right? She's cooking, she's cleaning, she's serving, she's doing all these things. Right? He is her son. So he gets engaged by her in helping her. So he's the servant of the servant of the servants. Right? That's the principle. That there's those who are engaged in the Lord's service. There are those who are engaged in their service. We are assisting them. Right? So it's very, very appropriate. Because Krishna is there. We approach through his devotees. Right? His devotees are already there. They have their main assistance. Right? We can assist them. Does that make sense? That is our position. Right? Radharani is already there. Rupa Goswami is already there. Our acharyas are already there. We can help them. Right? There's no space for us to directly serve Krishna. What's the use? What's the importance? Of what benefit will we give? Right? The principle, yeah. So that's that. So then the point becomes made is that is our position. Prabhupada talks about it here. So that is the, okay. The living entities are the marginal energy of the Lord, and therefore are they are meant for being properly utilized in transcendental loving service of the Lord. Right? Means properly utilized. So here he's just talking from the tattva aspect, is that they are there, and they're to be used in Krishna's service. They're to be engaged in Krishna's service. Then they are proper. Not, they're in Maya. That's their position. Right? So it's not, you know, some sentiment here. This is just the actual position. Is that the jiva is meant to be engaged in the Lord's servant by engaging in the service of the devotees. That's the position of the jiva. So we don't have to speculate what is our position. It's set. So now, here then, okay, so that's the position, right? Serving the Lord by glorifying the Lord and approaching his devotees, that's the point. Then being servant of the servant of these devotees, that's the point. Now these devotees then are discussed, Srila Prabhupada, that these were devotees who are following the principle of Vedanta. So that means they know the essence, the conclusion of the Vedic literatures. And they are thus the transparent via medium. You know the conclusion, then you know that it is Krishna and it is devotees. So one has to be a via medium. One can't be the doer. That is the point. You know, we see that is the natural position. Narad Muni is addressing Vyasadeva in this way. Even though Vyasadeva is his disciple, but his disciple is the incarnation of the Lord. Right? Of course, Narad Muni is also one of the mentioned incarnations of the Lord. So here's one incarnation to another speaking. But it's not, they're not, you know, hey, you know, like this kind of thing. But the respect is there. Vyasadeva is respecting Narad. Narad is respecting Vyasadeva. That respect is there. Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He respects Krishna. Whatever Krishna says, that's what he does. Krishna doesn't say it, he doesn't do it. That's his vow. Right? Duryodhana went to Balaram in Dwarka after going to Krishna and asking Krishna to fight for him. He said, you can have me or you can have my army. One, I think it was 1 billion, some ridiculous number, of ferocious cowherd warriors. Right? You know, like the locals around here, the Goshas, like the cowherd men, they're very ferocious. You don't want to mess with them. So Krishna had the Narayanas, they were an army of such Goshas. right? You can have me or the army. So then, but I won't fight. So Duryodhana happily accepted the army, and Arjuna happily accepted Krishna. So then after that, Duryodhana went to Balaram. He's saying, I'm doing pretty good. So then he went to Balaram and says, hey, why don't you join us? And he says, no. He says, I only do what Krishna does. I only follow Krishna. So Krishna's not fighting. He's not there, so I'm not fighting. Like that. You know, both of you, you're all family members. He's not getting involved. I'm not getting involved. So I'll go on pilgrimage. Right, so Balaram, even though he's the Supreme Lord, the only difference between him and Krishna is Krishna's black, he's white. Right? But that's it. And he only does what Krishna says. So he respects. And Krishna respects him, he's the elder brother. So this is culture. So he's telling, you can see the super soul, you are the Vaya medium, you are the spiritual master of the whole, you know, universe. So then perform those duties. Right? That's the point. Those duties should be performed. You haven't given them in a clear way. So therefore people approaching you will not get the ideal platform that they can gain from approaching the spiritual master. So by describing the Lord's glories, then you will have fulfilled in reality your duty as the spiritual master of the whole universe. Like that. So this is the principle. Then as to that proportion that service is rendered, then those devotees that service is rendered to those devotees, the Lord will reveal himself. That's the whole point. The Lord takes the devotee as himself. And how you serve the devotee, the Lord reveals himself. Right? So this is a very essential principle of devotional service. Nowadays, we like to play down the position of the guru and all this. You know, it's politically correct, it socially sounds great. But that means we're playing down the position of God. No ifs, no ands, no buts. From the top to the bottom, this is the principle. One can say the person's not qualified, the this, the that, but this is who Krishna comes through. Krishna comes to us through a Madhyama devotee. He doesn't come to us through an Uttama devotee. There's no one who has ever taken shelter of a devotee in history that has approached an Uttama, acting as an Uttama, and gotten shelter, got initiation, and was uplifted and taken back to Godhead. No example anywhere. Only Madhyamas approach devotees and allow them to be approached and instruct them how to go back to Godhead. Uttamas take everybody else as more advanced than themselves, so they'll never accept anyone. Only if an Uttama comes to the Madhyama platform. So the interface is always a Madhyama. Always. Even a neophyte, if they're engaged in the preaching mission, they have to act in the office of a Madhyama, though they don't have the realization. So the preaching mission is a mission of Madhyamas only. They may have the realization of a Kanista, of a Madhyama, or an Uttama. Of the three, one should approach someone with the realization of an Uttama. That's the recommendation. You don't get that, then a Madhyama. If not that, then a neophyte. But they have to act as a Madhyama. So this should be understood, is that God comes to us through the second class devotee. So if that's understood, then we might take the whole process more seriously. It's not a matter of sentiment we see here. This is a matter of understanding, a matter of etiquette, culture. So the expression of that interaction can be very elaborate, very opulent, or very simple. That is, one can adjust, that is what you adjust according to the political situation. What people will digest, what they won't digest. That you adjust. That is automatic. Here, Vyasadeva is living in an ashram, his guru is showing up, he's getting some simple reception and simple place to sit, right? Narad Muni goes and visits the Pandavas, then he gets very, very opulent seat, you know, gold and laden with jewels and special covers of people fanning him and maidservants and all these different things happening. Because the situation that they're in court, so naturally that's how you take care of people in court. Any king comes to do that. He's a sage, even more you'll do it. Vyasadeva lives in a hut. He has nothing. So therefore, then he'll get a grass mat, he'll get some water, right? He'll get some nice speech. That it changes according to the social position, the political position, the economic position, that changes. But the spiritual master being the representative of God, that doesn't change under any circumstance. It doesn't matter what their position is. If they're accepted by the devotee community as bona fide, then God works through them. You serve them, you're serving God. God comes to you through that person. You don't approach that person, you don't approach God. It's that simple. How you serve, that surrender to that person, is how God decides to reciprocate with you. You can't see God, you can see this person. So it's not a joke, it's not a matter of many people getting together, says here. Learned circles have positively concluded. Okay? Learned circles, not politically correct circles. Learned circles. Learned means those who know the Veda, those who study the Veda, those who practice the Veda, those who preach the Veda. That's a learned circle. Political correctness is pure politics. Politics is engaged in the Lord's service. Yudhishthira had to use so much politics in the Lord's service. So if you're going to manage, you have to use politics. Right? That's a given. But it is not the top. Shastra is the top. The standard set by Shastra and by the Acharyas, that's the top. Political correctness can be engaged in this, but political correctness on its own, absolutely useless if it's not engaged in the Lord's service through the medium of the scriptures, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And it's not a matter of just speaking. It's not sentiment. It says learned circles. You have to be able to, through logic and reason, show the exact path that you're using to connect the political position or the sentimental position to the Supreme Lord. If you can't do that, it's only talk. Right? It's only talk. Talk is cheap. Learned circles means you can take it back. You can show the direct connection. There may be very many steps between because what you're dealing with is very maybe more distant from Krishna, more technical. That's there. That's understood. Some things are more direct. Some things are less direct. You know, like chanting Hare Krishna is direct. Chanting on beads, the beads are indirect. But it's one step away. Right? Then you take a clicker. Okay, now that's a step away from that. Right? That's representing the beads. Right? So, but you can explain it. You can explain how it works, that the japa has to be counted. Right? Otherwise, then it'll be whimsical how much you count. Then your service to the Lord becomes whimsical. It shouldn't be whimsical. It should be fixed. Right? We're supposed to be nishta, fixed in the Lord's service. So therefore, there has to be a fixed amount. We can go beyond a fixed amount, but we can't go less. So therefore, it must be counted. Then the shastras say counting means on beads. Right? Because the beads then engage the senses. So between the hearing and the fingers, then between two points, then you get your fix. Otherwise, if it's one point, it can go anywhere. Right? You tie something at one end, it can flap around, but you tie it at two ends, it's fixed. Right? So that's, you can explain it. Right? And then, because of the situation, maybe because of the social or political situation, the bead doesn't work, so therefore, we use something else to count. But counting must be done. Right? But according to our tradition, what the Acharyas have used, they use beads. So that is our natural preference. But if that can't be used and for, you know, whatever it is, other purposes, then we will use this. You know, it is preaching, but that preaching is within the political or social field. Right? So this is the point. Then you know where you stand. Otherwise, you just say it's preaching, but anything could be preaching. Preaching in what way? What is the method? How do you know how to engage that method of preaching? Unless you know what field it's working in. Right? Unless you know the field, how do you know what you're doing? Then it's something that... So this is the point, is all these tools can be used in the Lord's service, but on their own, they have no meaning. That's Vyasadeva's, that's Narada Muni's point. You have described perfectly the political field, the economic field, the judicial field, the sensual field, and the field of knowledge. But you haven't shown how the Lord is directly connected in that. So therefore, since it comes from the Lord, you start from the Lord. And from the Lord, then He has created all these things and expanded into all these things. Therefore, that's how you find the Lord. That way, that is scientific. That is the method of learned circles. The ascending process, or no ascension at all, these are not recommended. Yes, the purport. The whole cosmic creation becomes at once identical with the Lord as soon as service in relation with the Lord is rendered under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. So that's the... basically the main point that is being given here in this verse. Some questions?
Sometimes we make a contrast between the spiritual master and the holy name.
Master and the holy name.
Sometimes they ask a question that if the holy name can take us back to Godhead, why do we need a spiritual master?
If the holy name can take us back to Godhead, yeah. Why do we need a spiritual master?
If the holy name is strong enough to do it, or the holy name is weak, that's that we in the spiritual. So okay. That's a question that comes like that, so it's contact to contact with each other.
Okay, so is the holy name not strong enough, so it needs an assistant with the spiritual master? So I would also have a question. What is the purpose of this point? The purpose of the point is they don't want to surrender to this person. So the difficulty comes is the holy name can take one back. But the problem is in the spiritual world, if the holy name alone exclusively took you back, you wouldn't be happy in the spiritual world. You would be miserable. Why? Because the spiritual world would be full of spiritual masters. Packed. It's like... And you would not be happy because it's you and the holy name, right? Because you don't want to deal with anybody else. So I've heard of it, I've seen it on posters, you get an Om sign in the clouds or something like that. Yeah, I've heard about it. It's a conception, but I haven't heard Acharyas talk about it. So that's why, unless you approach the spiritual master, because there is no such thing as directly approaching the Lord. Means as somebody, you may directly interface, there may be direct service, but your relationship is not direct. That has to be understood. You can render direct physical service to Krishna, but your relationship with Krishna is not direct. It is through the devotees. Just like the grandson can directly go and sit on his grandfather's lap, talk to him, interface with him, but his relationship is not direct. It's as the son of that man's son. Does that make sense? So the point is unless that's accepted, God can't interface with us. There's no need. Because that's not why we've been expanded. We haven't been created for direct interaction. That's His internal potency. Because His internal potency is Him. But the jiva is separated. It's separated. It's different. Right? That's why Mudra says two. Right? But at the same time is... there is the principle of oneness. If the mood is right, there's a oneness. So for Krishna, He sees as one. Just like the Father sees the Son as one. He doesn't make any distinction, but the Son makes a distinction. Right? So that's the thing. The jivas make that distinction. The Lord doesn't. So therefore, achinta veda veda tattva. Simultaneously one and different. We're one with Krishna, but at the same time we're different. But his internal potency is him. Directly. Like that. So that's why Krishna says, Krishna interfacing with his devotees, with the gopis, is like playing with yourself in the mirror. It's himself. Just himself, that particular form of himself. So because he is the all-attractive, he also then, being all-attractive, then has to have an element of attraction. Right? There's the attracted and the attraction. Right? You can't have attracted without attraction. They go together. So they're both him. So he is the attraction and he is the attracted. So he is the devotee. But at the same time as he's different. So the jivas then are separate, expanded from that. And then they can make their choice if they want to be there or not. Just like the material energy is separated. So we're also. And so we can make that choice or not. So, therefore, since we're going to interface with Krishna through the devotee, then we have to interface with the holy name through the spiritual master. The uniqueness of the holy name is, without any qualification, the holy name will bring you to the platform of qualification where you can surrender to the spiritual master. Because, like it or not, we shouldn't fool ourselves that we're qualified to take up chanting the holy name. You know, like that. That's the principle. Is that we're not qualified, but by the grace of the spiritual master, therefore causeless mercy, we're getting the opportunity. And then the name makes us qualified. You know, I mentioned this before. You want to have some fun, you look in the appendix of the second volume of the Pancharatra Pradeep. And there it's quoted, maybe about 15, 20 qualities that Sanatana Goswami recommends as qualifications for the disciple. Right? Nowadays it's very popular with a qualification of a guru, but has anybody ever looked at qualification of a disciple? And I would say a devotee who's been in the movement 30 years would probably have to think real hard if he's coming close to those recommendations. Some yes, some no. Like that. You know, Jiva Goswami was banished from Vrindavan because he became angry, you know, and showed some ego. Rupa Goswami rejected him. You know, it's like, what do we have to do with these materialists that you're there trying to establish that, no, we're this, we're that, we're the Gaudiyas, we're the top, we're the, who cares? You know, he goes around thinking he's big guy. You know, he's in Maya now and he's bigger and he'll be in, you know, he says, what do we get? We don't get involved in this. That was his point. Though, we understand, philosophically he's correct, he's supporting the spiritual master. But the point Rupa was making is we don't get involved in these things. Right? And that was based on a transcendental point. You know? So, what about a point of liberation, or dharma, or artha, right? A justice, we're standing up yelling and screaming about some morality. You know, we wouldn't even come into the picture at all. Here, he's standing on a principle of the spiritual master being offended. And Rupa Goswami still finds fault in his mentality. Right? Because the method he used. We can also support it, but the point is he's getting across this point, is it's very important, the mentality, that we're not involved in the materialistic way of thinking. Their concept of prestige and their concept of safety, you know, social status, we're not interested in that. So that's Rupa Goswami's point. The other point, Jiva's, is valid, that Rupa's making the point. So let alone he stand up with some moral issue that, you know, even Krishna doesn't care about. God doesn't care about morality. You know, he always has fun goofing on the moralists. Always has fun goofing on them. You know, he kind of makes it his business to goof on them. Like that. So that's the thing. It's because we're going beyond morality being so important is for Vaikuntha. The Braj is beyond morality. It's simply what pleases Krishna. That's what we do. Vaikuntha is, it's good, it's moral, and God, and all these different things. That's Vaikuntha. Braj is simply it pleases Krishna, whether it's moral or not. Right? We can't speculate that it pleases or not. It has to actually be. That's the point. So therefore, that's why we have to approach the acharyas. Does that make some sense? So the whole point is there's no question. It's not a matter of holy names, it's a matter of this. This is a mundane approach by someone who wants to maintain their independence of God. Because it's like, what's the name going to do to me anyway? Okay, a spiritual master will come and yell at me, but holy name, you know, it will do nothing. Like that. So it's a materialistic approach to the... It's okay. How does this relate to George Harrison or Peter Burwash, who accept Prabhupada as the spiritual master? See, he's the siksha, so one has to see what depth of that relationship develops. Is that you have many elements. Is that the point is until the surrender is complete, you don't get complete results. So that is the whole process, is the practice is done here, and that if that practice is high enough, that's continued in where the Lord's pastimes manifest in Gokul. So now if that surrender is enough on the Siksha platform, it could possibly take you to Gokul, where then you have to come to the point of actually taking that full surrender of the Nitya Siddhas. It has to be done at some point. If it's not done, you don't get the prema. So, therefore one has to, it will be very individual. But, what's recommended by the acharyas is that surrender and that taking of initiation, because that is the path given by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami, who has given it to us. That's recommended. But the Siksha Guru is considered non-different from the Diksha Guru, because the point of Diksha is to give Siksha. Right? It means you don't give too much instruction to someone who's not initiated. It's general. But when someone takes initiation, that means now you can get very serious about the instruction. Right? So the actual life is the Siksha Guru, one of the Siksha Gurus becomes the Diksha Guru. That's the point. So if the Siksha is accepted, maybe it didn't get to the Diksha platform. So it's very individual whether that took them far enough or whether they have to come back again. And then, it means, do they have to come back here and continue to that point, or is it far enough that they can continue in Gokul? Right? But the point is one can say, well, they made it, so I don't have to worry. But the point is you can get stuck at that point also for a long time. You know, the whole point is the method is there. The difference is whether you're dealing with material, gross and subtle body, and material energy to offer in the Lord's service in a mood of surrender and devotion, or you're dealing with a spiritual body and spiritual elements that have to be offered with devotion in a mood of surrender. It's just when you get to a certain level, you get the better facilities. You know, it's just like anybody knew. Anybody new gets the, you know, common paraphernalia. And as soon as someone advances to a certain degree within that field, then they start getting the very excellent material. Because they can actually take advantage of it, because that surrender and dedication is greater. Because if you give that to the new person, they won't appreciate it. Right? Does that make some sense?
It sounds... I appreciate that, and except what you're saying, getting stuck is going to pull. Are there examples in
that? Are there examples of getting stuck? When you take the, we always give the example of the yogic Brahmins. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, very typical. Generally, you would most generally get stuck on this side. But see, there's an overlap. Is if you get to the point of Brahma Bhuta, and it's being done, you know, and so you're detached from material energy, and there is some attachment to Krishna, that basically is, that would get you into Gokul. You can even get into Gokul for less than that. So that means you can be in Surab Siddhi. You know, main thing is if you remember Krishna at the time of death, you'll get there. Right? Whether you've advanced to that point before that or not. Because for us, it's not, it's the principle is how you die. Right? By how you live is going to influence how you die. But of the two, how you die is going to be the main thing. So if you live a life of debauchery, it's very likely at death you're not going to remember Krishna. And if you live the life of, you know, proper sadhana, at the time of death you remember Krishna. But even if you have proper sadhana, but if you remember something else other than Krishna, still it's not going to be perfect. So therefore, at the time of leaving the body, what is the consciousness, that's what takes you to the next. So if you remember, that will get you into Gokul. And if even if the advancement hasn't gotten up to that Brahma-Bhuta stage. But between Brahma-Bhuta and... It means within Brahma Bhuta there's five levels before Prema. Does that make some sense? It means there's five stages of Bhava Bhakti. Means understanding who you are, being able to adjust with that and act within that, then within acting in that, coming to the point of samadhi. By remembering the Lord so much that your focus is so great to come to full samadhi. Then from that point of full samadhi, then you go into the point of actually being able to be directly part of the pastimes. That will then bring you to the point of inheritance, where now you are part of the pastimes. Then you inherit your natural position. It's just like the son is born. It's natural that he will inherit the heritage of the father, but only after he proves himself, and only after he matures. It's automatic that he'll inherit. So the same way as one inherits one natural position in one's relationship with the Lord. One inherits, so that's the fifth. That means then you come to prema. So what do you inherit? Prema. So the third stage is actually the point in between. Because unless you come to full samadhi, you can get caught at that point of just absorbed in remembering Krishna, it says for hundreds of verses. And what will keep one back? Pride. That I am a devotee and I am the spiritual master of devotees. Right? That's the subtlest form of control and enjoyment. Right? Like that. So I am advanced is my position. So that means I am the controller. Right? So that's the subtlest form of envy of the Lord. Then there is I am the spiritual master of devotees, because by that, that's interaction and relationship and facility and all those different things will come. So that's the subtlest form. So until that's clear, one doesn't move on. That's why it's recommended that from the earliest stage possible, Trinada Pisu Nichena is taken up very seriously. Because if that's gained, then that going through to prema goes very, very quickly. If that's not gained, you can get stuck at that point, being an Uttamadhikar in your spiritual form there, and not get anywhere for hundreds of births. That would be operated from this site, of course, because otherwise you don't take birth there. But here, by meditation, you'll be the big, big advanced Uttamadhikari, absorbed in meditation, you know, in your spiritual form, in the spiritual world for hundreds of births, if you don't move beyond this point. That's why when the gopis were proud of their position, Krishna left them. Because it's not interesting to Krishna. He's God. He's not puffed up about that. Right? So therefore, his devotees shouldn't be either. So that's the position. Does that make some sense? So these are... You know, we're not trying to scare anybody with all this. We're just trying to point out is that the process is scientific. It does work. and we should be careful about it. You know, we shouldn't take it for granted. What you can take for granted is if you remember Krishna, you go back to Godhead. So therefore, you have to do those things that will make you remember Krishna. Whether scientifically one understands all this or not, that doesn't matter. But one has to remember Krishna. That means you have to be doing those activities that are a connection with glorifying Krishna. And if it's not glorifying Krishna, then it's risky. It becomes risky. Is that okay?
You're saying if you get stuck here, but you're in full meditation of Krishna. But if you're in full meditation of Krishna, isn't that as good as being with Krishna? I mean, isn't that?
Yeah, it's as good as being with, but the point is in that side, you're with Krishna according to the situation that's there. Means if you are in your spiritual form in the spiritual world, you don't just do what you do. You are assisting somebody, and they tell you what to do. So you're going to be doing whatever they tell you what to do. But the point is means when I say fully means there's five levels of samadhi, of meditation, right? You have smriti, anusmriti, like this, you know, it goes up to samadhi. So until it comes to samadhi, it's less than complete. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, I just, you know, they always say you're in the material world, you have to love the mundane things, but you're conscious of Krishna, it's not mundane, it's spiritual.
So yeah, so that will take you to the spiritual world.
But they also say it's not even like you want to go, because you're content, you're here doing my Krishna. It's like you're cooking in the kitchen, you're thinking of Krishna, it's the same as if you were in the for nothing.
Yeah, it is the same. But at the same time is then when you walk out of the kitchen, then you walk back out to shut and jive with your friends. That's the point. So we're trying to get to the point where you don't walk out. That's the thing. Because otherwise the tendency is then that's the beginning stage of devotional service, is that I know something and so therefore now I become the big pundit. That's Utsamayi. Is that, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, it's as good as. I'm as much as Goloka Vrindavan. And hey, did you hear what happened to that devotee? Yeah, I don't know. How they did that. Ooh, that's it. You know, and then, what has that got to do with it? So that's the point. Because it's not even in the interest. So they don't even talk about it, right? The other gopis who, other camps, they don't talk about the other camps. Their camp stands on its own. Right? That's how you know what's solid. Vastu, or reality, stands on its own. It doesn't have to stand because something else is bad. Right? So therefore, Radharani and her associates, they don't have to sit around and speak about how the other gopis are out to lunch. They don't have to. There's no need. Because they have their service. So until all that's gone from the heart, then one's not going to be happy in Goloka. Because there, they don't sit around and criticize people. That's not their fun. They just get absorbed in their service. They get absorbed in the rasa. And it's not the rasa of finding fault. That's easy, because that's the mood of control, right? Living anyone wants to be in control. You're in control, you enjoy it. So if I can find some fault in someone else, that means I'm superior. So if I'm superior, therefore I'm in control. That's why you always see the first thing is to try to find the fault in the other person. Because that's the natural thing, is I want to be in control. Then from that, I find the fault in the person, therefore I can enjoy it. So what I want, I can do. It's just the inherent nature. So spiritual world, they don't find fault, because they're not in control, Krishna's in control. And they're not the enjoyer, Krishna's the enjoyer. So there's no need for that whole mundane process. Does that make sense? So, yes. Last one.
Whether I'm present, I'm illusions, misconceptions that somebody's claiming that it's following the descending process, actually, is the essential practice and present it as it's.
Not sure, it's a little too subtle.
It's
saying at the present time something is following.
Oh, at the present time.
Ascending transcendence is claiming to be descending.
If they are following ascending and claim to be descending, what happens to them? Or
if there are such.
Or if there are such misconceptions where you have someone who is following ascending, though they claim it's descending.
Yeah.
Well, you naturally have the impersonalists. They always claim that they're following the scriptures and they are going to elevate themselves and all that. Well, actually, they don't claim to be descending. They claim only to be ascending. Devotees have to be very, very careful as if they take some religious principles and then say that's going to be their method to get back to Godhead. Because actually the Lord descends only as far as religious principles. Sub-religious principles and sensuality, he doesn't descend into. He descends to Dharma, as low as Dharma. And Dharma, if Artha and Kama are connected to Dharma, they become then spiritualized. But he doesn't descend any lower than that. Like that, that's the whole, I think remember, what is it? Paroksha, aparoksha, adhokshaja, adhokshaja, aprakrita, adhokshaja, paroksha, aparoksha. I forget what's the lowest. But there is the consciousness of the senses, there's the extended senses, because justice, morality, they're sub-religious, because they're based on the senses. They're how to properly engage your senses according to religious principles. That's morality. But it has to be based on morality. Because all it is how everybody can enjoy the senses. But that has to be, how do you come to a common point, how everyone's going to enjoy the senses, unless you have a religious principle to base it on. Because otherwise everybody has a different idea how to enjoy the senses. Right? That's, you know, like I heard of, like somebody that's, you know, they want to, you know, somebody likes a nice open field. Someone likes to put up a wall. Then they know this side is mine, that side's theirs. Other people like to tear the wall down and get enjoyment out of that. You know, so how do you decide what is the platform of sensuality? So that's the religious principle. And that's applied with the support of sub-religious principles. Being nice, being good, being nonviolent, being fair, all these things like that. The rule is what you do. You interact in a proper cultured way. That's based on the sub-religious principle of nonviolence or morality or these different things like that. So those only have meaning if they're connected to the culture. If they're not connected to the culture, they don't have any meaning. Because otherwise, how do you define being nice? Right? You bring that up in an assembly where they say, you know, you have to be good. Then you say, okay, define good. And you'll find that you could go on for days arguing that point, you won't get to anything, because there's not a common point that it comes from. Right? So it's a mood, it's a sentiment. As soon as you start talking legal, that means you start logically defining the thing, then the next point will go, oh, you don't accept the spirit of it. But if the spirit does not, based on religious principles, then that spirit is a ghost. Right? It's not the mood. It's a ghost. And that ghost is materialistic. It's impersonal, right? That's why I said, don't dig on the northern side for the treasure, because the ghost of impersonalism will catch you. So that's the thing. The spirit has to be what is descended from the Hoksaja, from the Lord. That comes through the religious principles. Then you can apply it onto social and economic and all that, if you're talking in that realm. If you're talking transcendental, you don't have to bother with this. And it's just the Lord and his devotees, his pastimes, or tattva. But if you're going to bring it down to the mundane platform of good and bad, then it has to come through morality. I mean, through religion. Otherwise, it's speculative. Then it's impersonal. Because as soon as it's speculative, it's impersonal. Because the Lord's not involved. He didn't descend into it, so it's impersonal. It appears nice, it appears very personal if you're talking about it, but extended sense gratification means that. You're worried about everybody's senses, but that doesn't mean that you're a theist. Atheists are also worried about everybody's senses. So that's the principle. We have to be very, very careful of these points. That's why Prabhupada said, when we came to Sevastam, Nirvase Shunyavad, right? Not from drugs and sex. Right? That happened the first day we moved into the temple. That was the easy part. The impersonalism and voidism, that's the tough part. Right? You don't write that into the eternally write that into the, you know, how you say, prayer to the spiritual master unless that's something significant. Does that make sense? Like that. So we always have to be careful of that, is that unless you have that connection, that's the point, is religious principles were being spoken by Arjuna. The Krishna said it's not enough because God hasn't descended into those religious principles. Until you're doing those religious principles for him, for his satisfaction, then it's a hoax again, then he descends into it. You know, same with the Mahabharata. It means all those religious principles are being there, but how has God descended into it? That's the weakness. That's why Bhagavatam has to be spoken. Then you see how those who acted according to that, where the Lord did descend into it, how they acted. What is their mentality? That's what you're looking for. Because it's not enough. Religious principles aren't enough. Right? Knowledge is not enough. The point is it's God. He's enough. Right? Because he's everything. Yeah, so that's enough. That's sufficient. Right? You can't get better than that. So when he descends into it, then it all becomes spiritual. Right? The whole cosmic creation becomes at once identical with the Lord as soon as service and relation with the Lord is rendered under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Under the guidance. It's not under the guidance, it doesn't matter. Right? Vox populi won't fly. Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't have one good word to say about that principle. And they used the term vox populi. They just wrote it off as useless. Perception is useless unless it's connected to Shabda. If it's connected to Shabda, then it's nice. That means then it's realization. When you can see the Shastra in what you're doing, that's what you're trying to get to. That's realization. Knowledge is you understand the Shastra, and you understand technically how to apply it. Realization is you see it practically in with your senses and with what you deal with. So that's what we're trying to get to, but it's based on it. That's why it descends. If you start with perception and then try to stuff that into Krishna consciousness, it may or may not work. But because you started with it, Krishna's not there, so then why are you dealing with it? Right? If you first start with Krishna, what is the standard? Then that will descend into perception. So we simply start with perception. It's people's perception. That's nice, but what's the value of their perception? People perceive Krishna as bad. Radharani is unchanged. What do we care? I would say good publicity, bad publicity. What do we care? It's publicity. Right? I mean, there's people who make their money by specific. They're hired by companies to make bad publicity. Right? You go out and you say, okay, this company is doing really nice and doing this and that. Who cares? You go out and make publicity that this company has just, you know, wiped out half the planet and is destroying everything. Everybody wants to know who they are, right? I mean, how long have Muslims been around, right? Some time, right? There's been Muslims around. People have heard about Muslims in the Middle East and here and there. And there's, you know, in America, it's very common that blacks are Muslim. Who cared about Muslims? Nobody, right? The Twin Towers go down. The most books sold on the market were books about Islam. People wanted to know, who are these people? Before that, they couldn't care less who the Muslims were. After that, everyone wanted to know, who are these people? Right? And then after that, then if you come up with some positive propaganda, then everybody interested, because they already want to know. So that's why, for us, good, bad, it doesn't matter. With that, it doesn't matter. Means you manage it, but it doesn't really matter. Because someone who's bad today, tomorrow's good. Right? I mean, Phulan Devi was biggest, nastiest dacoit there was. Next day, they're making movies about her, novels about her. She's a member of parliament. She's a great, great person. You know, that's the way politics is. That's called spin doctrine. You know, so that's the point is. If you want to deal with politics, you have to know how to spin doctor. You don't know spin doctor, then don't play around with it. It's above your head. You know, you either know the field or don't bother. You know. So it's like, you know, this is all it is semantics. It's just a word. You know, it's like, you know, like in your place. They were simply trying to purify the atmosphere of the area where in they were living. So they were just cleansing it ethnically, right? They were doing some ethnic cleansing, right? Sounds really great, right? Now if you go back a few years, that was called, you know, genocide, where you just take a particular ethnic group and wipe it out. So genocide has a bad connotation, so you don't want to use that, right? But ethnic cleansing, that doesn't sound so bad, that most people won't even know what it is. You know? I mean, cleansing is a nice thing, yeah. And ethnic, yeah, ethnic's good, yeah, ethnic's in these days. I like going for ethnic, you know, dinners, yeah, they're pretty good. You know, and clean, yeah, I like clean, yeah, it should be a clean, I wouldn't go to a dirty restaurant, you know. Wouldn't want any Mexican cockroaches calling out, you know, something like that. You know, so they don't know what's going on. So that's the whole thing. It's just, it's words. So therefore, it's not a problem for us. We know what we do. We stand on it. We win. Like that. Duryodhana was politically correct. He had 11 Akshahinis of soldiers. Right? Yudhishthira only had 7. Right? Who won? Yudhishthira, because he followed religious principles to please the Lord. Duryodhana didn't. He had the best people, the best opportunity, everything. Materially, the best. Yudhishthira, second best. Right? There were more Apiratis and Maharaj on Duryodhana's side. I mean, Bhima was, you can't even count him as an Apirati. He's beyond. Apirati means they can fight with 60,000 chariot warriors. Maharati means 10,000. Rati means 1,000. Bhima's in his own class. Bhishma, yeah, Bhishma's in his own class. Like that. And Shalya, he was an Apirati, but Duryodhana got him. So, I mean, they were highly outweighed. Everything was in favor of Duryodhana. Everything was there. He had political power. He had everything behind him. But he lost because the Pandavas stuck to their principles. And Bhishma told that to Duryodhana every day. He was saying, why are we losing? And he'd say, because they are followed in this principle, they have God on their side. That's why. There's no question you're going to win. He says, we'll all die here, but you're not going to win. You know. And Dhritarashtra would say the same thing. Oh, fate is so bad and this. You know, my son wouldn't listen to me and that. And Sanjaya would just say, hey, it's nothing to do with your son not listening. It's a matter of what you did. You didn't say, you know, because he doesn't listen, why did you give him the authority to do it? It's your fault. So it's a matter of accepting responsibility. If you accept responsibility, it works. Yudhishthira accepts responsibility. It works. Dhritarashtra won't accept responsibility. It doesn't work. He loses. Does that make sense? So I think we should end here. Pratara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sarvita Bhakta Vrinda ki, Chaitanya Prabhu ki.